Hey everyone, good morning. Thank you for tuning in. Today's episode is going to be a quicker one, or I'm going to try to make it a quicker one. Essentially, there's an underlying point to the stories I'm telling. And I'll tell you right now, it's the value of life. And when we internally, individually, do not have enough value for life, guess who starts showing up around us? Death, the opposite. It's a trade system. It's a scale system. So when we get too light in life, or let's say we get too heavy on life, and we're not so confident that life is the best answer, well, the other option will show up and give us the option. And it will most of the time be our choice whether we choose to remain living or if we die. And it seems like it's a trivial thing I'm talking about, but it's not. We are humans. We're swayed by so many emotions that we don't see things as clearly as they are. The only two realities we ever have access to are life and death. And both of those things are conscious. They are what the ancients used to call gods. We know them as forces that we're afraid of in the modern generation. How many people look around your community, your friends, your family, and how many people live in fear? They won't do what they maybe were born to do because they're afraid of living. So we as humans in this generation have become afraid of both living and dying. And the more we're afraid of living, the more death is going to present itself at our door to give us another option. So if we're seeing all this famine and war and mass killings going on all over the world, or specifically in one country, the United States, with these mass killings, it's because, it's a very simple equation, it's because you, the person who believes that good and not evil, see my dogs are sounding the alarm because I'm making a good point right now, it is you, not the evil person that has caused the evil. And I say this because your lack of engagement and enthusiasm for life itself. And I'm not talking like getting up and being happy about going to your job. No, get up and be happy that today you're going to quit your job and go do after that whatever makes your heart happy for the first time in your life. This is my point of this podcast, that the justification to live a shittier life just because that's life is death. And death will find you. I absolutely promise. Here's an example. When I was 18 years old, I felt that I was at the peak of my potential and what I could possibly do in this world on my own with the talents I had and the resources and support I had around. Every night, I would meditate and beg the universe to send me a teacher who could use my potential. Then one day, because I saw no more challenge or value in the life I was living, I was picked up and thrown and slammed into the ground 10 times as a passenger in the driver of this car I was barely even friends with. It was a complete random occurrence that put me in check, that said, okay, you don't want to work for life anymore, then work for death. You will die and you will go this way and see if you can survive this challenge and find it more fulfilling than life previously. And I realized that death, well, death itself was not necessarily the challenge. It was me surviving death and having to recover to at least the point I was prior to this death experience, or near-death experience, as people call it. So instantly, I was given this perspective of, you have life one moment, you have death another, and you, by some miracle, Tobin, have life again the next moment. This is rare, this does not happen often. What you've been through is not something many people will understand, and I understand that now. But then I didn't understand. So I thought, oh, I've just been through some shit. I know it was some major shit. People are telling me it's a miracle. I'm a miracle. There was some other forces at work. Yeah, clearly. But my perspective was, now I'm 19 years old. I want to be having fun like the other college kids. I want to play soccer. I was restricted from playing soccer because I was so injured. I was medically redshirted. I was not handling stress very well. My brain injury was still healing. I was fully engulfed in college curriculum for basically pre-med kinesiology, which was terribly difficult classes. And I was overwhelmed. I was away from my family, who I had a strange relationship with, especially after this accident, in which my father quite honestly didn't know what to do because I was so destroyed. And my mother was basically trying to nurse me back to health to get me out of the house because she didn't want to deal with me. And she would whisper that into my ear every day. So now I was in college thinking, okay, nobody I talk to has been through anything like me. They're acting like everything's normal, so I'm just going to act like everything's normal. And, fast forward, a whole bunch of parties, a whole bunch of, nights I drank way too much and started reevaluating, is this for me? And it all came to a climax or a tipping point when I went on the traditional college spring break down to Mexico for a week during that 1 week off we have from college with a bunch of the people from my school and the girl I was dating and all her crazy party friends. So we get in Acapulco, and the first or second day I'm there was the first time I was aware that this was a place that teetered on a thin line between life and death. And everybody was pretty oblivious to these two giant forces intermingling like a high tide set of waves on a rocky, cliffside beach. This is not something you want to play in, but for some reason, humans were enjoying people. I was enjoying playing in this chaos zone, where as soon as you start enjoying life the most, death might be right there to knock you down. And this wasn't, the death I had experienced. This was people going to a place thinking they were going to have fun and pure joy and never being told that it was a literal death trap. So my first or second night, I can't recall, this is going back 15 years now, I'm hanging out on the balcony of our hotel, and I look over, and there's a couple having sex on the side of the balcony. And all of a sudden, they both fall. And I'm sorry to laugh, but it's like, you don't believe what you see when you see it. And they both fall, and they hit the ground, and I was like, what the fuck? And they were about, 10 stories up. And I walked inside to my roommates. There was two of the guys on the soccer team staying with me. I said, I think I just saw somebody die. And they kind of laughed it off. And we went down to get some food, I think, maybe some dinner before we were going out that night. So everybody was in this mode, like, I got to go party. So they weren't really taking it serious. I went down. There's, by the front desk, this big eating area and kind of bars and where everybody gathered before they went out to go out for the night on town. And I don't remember if I said anything to anybody. I probably went to the front desk and they're like, oh, yeah, they're fine, or something like that. So I just brushed it off and I didn't think really much about it. We go out the next day, I'm on the beach, just kind of sobering up, and we're having some breakfast, sitting on these chairs out on the beach. And my friends and I, a couple guys on the Rhode Island football team, and myself, who was on the soccer team, decide, hey, let's go swimming. Let's go in the ocean. We'll cool down. Salt water will sober us up a little bit. And as soon as we start jogging towards the beach, we see a few people in the ocean, and one person gets picked up about 10 feet in the air and slammed to the ground and screaming, and it looks like they broke their leg. And that was my first experience with the Pacific Ocean at high tide. And we were not warned. There was no signs on the beach. It was just chaos, so we turned quickly around and said, no, thank you to the ocean this week, let's stick to the pool. And that was another time, just death was right there and nobody really knew it, and we were actually running into it with a smile on our face, like oblivious. Again, that's going to be a common word here, because humans ultimately are oblivious by how close death is standing next to us all the time. And it's not a threat. It's a support system. It's saying, if you fall, I got you. Although we don't get to get back up after that fall, as far as we know, in terms of same life reincarnation. But your soul will travel to another body one day. Don't worry. With that said, death being right next to us all the time is actually a good thing to have. And I'm speaking this during a time where it's huge for me. I have nobody. I have nothing here. I'm literally on my last dollars from money I made in the United States. I think my last $3 right now. And I'm not necessarily generating enough money in Costa Rica yet to survive. So I have a choice right now. I could wither away and financially die and like sell off all my assets and my house here and my car and everything I love and I've worked really hard for since I've gotten here. Or I could decide to survive and realize that this looming death, figurative death next to me, is giving me an opportunity to recognize life and where I should be placing value and where I should be grinding and hustling and busting my ass, because that is a thing if you want to succeed. It's balance. But right now I'm going hard for life because I want to live, and I know if I don't start working my ass off, that death is going to find its way to me again. And it's just a warning system. We're out drinking. A night later, I think this is maybe the same night as I saw that person on the beach, but again, it's a blur. We're at this beautiful, beautiful nightclub that's like two or three stories. It's all windows, and it's overlooking the Pacific Ocean from a mountainside cliff. Like, very much a Costa Rica scene, but they don't build things like that here because it was too gaudy and commercial. But in Acapulco, at 21 years old, it was a beautiful, beautiful thing for me to experience. I love to dance. There's beautiful women, great music. And then I go up to the bar. I'm waiting for a drink. I see this girl take a shot. Then I see the girl grab her throat. Then I see the girl drop to the ground. Then I see everybody start screaming. And then I see security grab the girl and pull her out. And then I see everybody continue like nothing happened. And in the kind of short rumor mill that was going on was, careful taking your shots because broken glass can be in the glasses. That's what happened to that girl. So she was given a shot of some alcohol for a dollar and died because of it, because there was broken glass in the shot glass and that went down her throat and cut her up, and she probably bled to death, or who the hell knows like what type of terrible experience that girl had after and where she is now. So then I realized, oh shit, like maybe I am, this is a sign to stop drinking, because it's not only alcohol and the side effects of alcohol that could get you, it's shit like that that could kill you and make it miserable way to die. And that was a big wake-up call. At 21 years old, after that trip, I stopped drinking for the most part. I only drink no more than 10 times a year at this point. Since I've been in Costa Rica, maybe a little bit more to kind of celebrate and add a nice conclusion to my life of wellness and sobriety up in the United States. But again, at 21 years old, I had this super wake-up call because death was standing all around me and said, here I am. If you want me, this is the path you walk down. And I said, whoa, whoa, this is a dangerous path. I just was hiking in the woods and took a new path and stumbled upon a bunch of rattlesnakes and mountain lions and hungry, angry bears waiting to eat me. And I decided to backtrack and try to find the Garden of Eden that I came to this earth for. So the point here, and I'm going to kind of touch upon one more thing. Another Acapulco story. A night or two later, I still wasn't thinking clearly, and I was, you know, trying to impress my friends and the people I was with. So the taxis in Acapulco are these little 1970s Volkswagen buggies. And
You're like, oh, that's such a cute little harmless taxi. So we're going to a bar or a nightclub, and I'm trying to be cool. So I say to the taxi driver, I say, hey, I'll pay you double if you get us there quicker. The girls were impressed. My friends were like, yeah, cool. Good move. We're about two blocks into our drive. We're stopped at a red light. And we look to the left, and in front of this nightclub, there is a flipped over taxicab bug with people hanging out the windows, some of them moving, some of them not. And I tapped the guy on the shoulder. I said, I'll pay you double to go half the speed you were planning to go. And that was another one. It was just like there was so many close calls. Like, you know, we were literally in the same car, probably same amount of people. Probably the driver was a cousin of that driver. And he would have done that to us for no problem, just because the promise of a little extra money. And then I started realizing, wow, like, all right, we also live in a world where even though there's death and life sitting on a thin little balance beam, people will push other people into death just for money. And that gave me an eye-opening experience about what really goes on in the United States and the Western culture and the world, for that matter, and humans. So the value of life is seen most clearly at those moments of death. These lessons have translated big time for me here in Costa Rica. I mean, I can say that I swim in the same river as crocodiles. And that is something I never imagined I would say in my life. That is something that this philosophy has brought me to, that I value so life so much right now, and I've survived so many things and so many close calls and witnessed so many people losing their lives that I care about, from friends growing up to my father to you know, a girl I was in love with when I was in college who became one of my best friends and arguably had the sweetest heart and spirit I've ever met in my entire life in any person. And she was, I don't know, 25, 28 years old when she died of cancer. So, man, death is always right next to us. And honestly, I believe death is our best friend because it teaches us to live more than any of our human friends or family ever will. Death is that constant reminder that we are here to live, and we need to live. We need to breathe deeper and experience more and tell people how we feel, whether it's they hurt us or they helped us. And we need to tell people because it's important, and they need to grow from both of those experiences in order to not repeat them or repeat them, depending on how good they are to other people, or, you know, whether they're leading us all closer to death or life. We are in a time on Earth right now where death is close to everybody, and you don't know when it's going to hit you. You could walk into a supermarket or a church or a school and be shot by a psychopath. You know, the people, the individuals to blame are all of us, because we're not valuing life properly as a society, as a community. In your community, look around the 10 houses close to you. Evaluate those people. Do you think they value life? Or they're fearing death and kind of moving, navigating their life to kind of avoid death? Or are they living life vividly? Are these people that, you know, in a rainstorm are standing outside, like, with their mouth open, you know, drinking the rain, like, being grateful or appreciative? Or are these people that are on the computer, on Facebook, messaging and posting statuses about how the rain sucks so much? Because our society has shifted more to that second person, and that's the lack of value for life. And that's inviting death into your life. And I will tell you from experience, if we continue down this road, there is no one to blame and no excuse for all of this death happening on the planet other than the person in the mirror and the people in your sphere of influence. It's very simple. When we begin to value life and experience life, both as individuals and as communities and as the collective, death will disappear. Like, we might actually beat death through a philosophical means, through a way of thinking, rather than a biological means or a way of medicating. And I know that makes more sense to you, because medications have only been destroying us with all the side effects. They help one thing, they destroy five other things. So if we have longevity due to medication biologically one day, we might live to 300 years old, but our quality of life is going to be terrible. I'm telling you right now, it's just an obvious deduction from the system we're employing at this point. If we start to change the way that we see the world and the way that we live our lives and the way that we value life itself and respect death, the balance will come. There have been beings on this planet that have lived hundreds of years, sometimes in individual pockets, sometimes as communities. And it's written about in the history books of our world if you really read them and don't just listen to teachers that are teaching what's in a curriculum. Don't be mad at your teachers. Be mad at yourself that you did not have enough value for life to explore life and learn about life. You just took whatever was given to you on a spoon and swallowed it and then got mad at the person feeding you with the spoon. And that's ridiculous. Okay? I had terrible teachers, but that didn't make me stop engaging in life. That made me try to learn what the teachers didn't know so I could surpass them and get onto a better class where that teacher of a more challenging class could tell the old teacher, you fucked up because this is one of the smartest people that has ever passed through your class and you should have listened more and been humble and valued life more and realized that a teacher is the person who's meant to be learning all the time so they can share their knowledge. We in the United States feel that we need to cement our minds at the age 22 and we know everything and everybody around us has to listen, and that's ridiculous, and that's why you're all assholes, and that's why the world hates you in the United States, and that's why you're all dying and your own people are killing you because they see you as exactly who you are. I decided to try to help you for 10 years in fitness and then I decided to get away from you all. Think about that. A lot of people do this because I value my life. And everything that I was presented with in the United States was an opportunity to die one way or another by the hands of the people that I trusted and cared about. And that's terrifying. And it's exclusively a mindset of people in the United States, this competitiveness where you don't care about love, you don't care about friendship, family, future, potential, destiny. Nobody in the United States cares about that. They just care about the bottom line, their dollar. And everybody says it's just the CEOs that care about that. That's bullshit. Because every day when people are working, all they're thinking about is how much money they're making per hour and what they could spend it on. It's disgusting. You need to stop it. Everyone needs to start valuing life more so death steps away. It's a relationship. It's a dance. And everybody has forgotten how to dance with life and has lost interest in dancing with life. And you're stepping on its toes and you're pushing it over. You're ignoring it. And it's going to say, okay, I'll let another dance partner come in with you, and it's death. All right? And unfortunately, my father was, and this is how I'm going to kind of end it, my father was a great example of what happens when your value for life disappears and death has an opportunity to step in. My father lived the most engaged, helpful, accomplished in so many dynamics, so accomplished in so many areas that he could turn down opportunities that were even better because he cared about quality of life for the future and not for the moment. He could have played professional soccer for a few years, uninsured, but as a result would not have had the opportunity to build the 35-year business that he built and ran during his lifetime successfully that now my brother is trying to succeed with. If not for my father really understanding the value of life and how not to, you know, change your partners to dancing with death too early, my brother would have no future right now, at least at the degree and exponent he has it at the moment, because my father did that for him and essentially sacrificed his life so my brother could have a good future. Now, I don't know if my brother values that. In our relationships, in our conversations, I'm going to say he doesn't yet understand, but hopefully he has a wake-up call one day. My father, on the other hand, as he was handing the business over to my brother pushed him out of it and wanted him to have nothing to do with it, which was a stupid move in my opinion. You don't tell the master that you're the master and to get out of there. Like, in martial arts, you will die the next day. That's just how it works. Like, you're an idiot. But people make their decisions like that in the United States. And as a result, my father kind of lost his purpose for life. He lost his value for life and didn't see he had any more value in life. And unfortunately, like, I made mistakes too. I should have just closed my business down and spent time with him and maybe built a business with him, with his guidance, and or just started, you know, maybe moved to Costa Rica with him and just been in paradise and living life properly. But for a couple of years after that, all he saw was impending death, and he started to do his dance with death very young. I think he passed at 63, 64 years old. But he made this conscious decision at some point to just dance with death and to no longer value and dance with life anymore, which is noble for somebody. You know, he had cancer. It wasn't going well. Doctors in the United States are all idiots, and they just want to keep people sick to keep money coming in. And it sucks. You know, I'm not mad at it. It's just the time of the world we're in, and it just happened to be the country that we were living in that cares about money more than anything. They don't really see people as living things. They just see them as paychecks, and it is what it is. You know, my father didn't really understand the language, and, you know, my mother wasn't too keen on helping him. She was dealing with her own shit, whatever, selfish, but he just looked around and decided, okay, like, everybody's getting on without me. This cancer wants me, so I'm going to dance with it. And he chose to dance with it, which I feel was very noble, because it's not an easy way to go. It's not a pain-free way to go, and it's not a comfortable way to go. But it was his choice. And, you know, I'm 30 years younger than he was when he passed, but I feel like I'm making that choice every day because I've been through these experiences, and I value life so much that I have to make my last day decisions every day. And what I mean by that is every day when I wake up, I have this presumption, just because everything I've been through might one day just somehow catch up with me. Like, I might, my neck might break down or my back might break down from, you know, all the work I've been doing, and just decide it's going to have a nerve breakdown and paralyze me one day. And that's a potential. My traumatic brain injury could start to evolve into, you know, the thing that all the NFL players have been getting, the CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which deteriorates your brain and kind of brings on early Alzheimer's. Like, I don't know if that's ever going to happen. I had a car land on my head 10 times. I played Division I soccer after that, full contact, head-to-head with people for years after that. So every day I wake up, I don't know if I'm going to walk out and get bit by a poison snake, or an alligator is going to eat me in the river, or the current in the ocean is going to take me out to sea, or I'm going to get in a car accident with a drunk driver. Like, these are things I evaluate, but I'm not fearing them. I'm seeing that these are potentials in my life from my experience. I might come down with cancer tomorrow because my father had it. It's in my genetics. There's a million options for death to dance with me, but knowing that I don't want to dance with death that day, I say, okay, what am I going to do if this is my last day alive? What can I do today? Who can I help? What can I see? What can I taste? What can I try to learn? If it's my last day, because I might not have another opportunity like this again. And that is the point of this entire episode here. It's a little shorter one, but the key I want you to leave with is engage with life, find value in life, wake up every day and think of the 10 things that you appreciate most about life itself, and say thank you to life as if it was a conscious being for those things, and ask for more of those things to come into your life. And when you step out of your door that day, try to accomplish or achieve one of those things without having it fall into your lap. Try to take steps towards living well and living fully and living the life the way you should be. Otherwise, we are doing nothing but inviting death into our lives. Okay, guys? Like, this is how we solve the mass shootings. We live life more. And it shows other people to live life more and not have value for death. Because when death steps in, it can take two forms. We can want to die ourselves, or we can want to kill other people. It's the same thing as life. When life steps in, we want to feel joy ourselves, or we want to bring joy to other people. It's a very simple equation, and we complicate it I've been thinking for a while, many years, but most recently in the past month, like what can someone suggest to fix this problem? It has nothing to do with guns. It does have to do with humans allowing demons into their consciousness, but that is hyperbole. It's not something we can legitimize to a scientific thinker right now. So to a scientific thinker, to a spiritualist over a religious person, please value life more. And that will bring an induction of electromagnetic energy from the entire universe to spread that around the planet. Has nothing to do with video games, movies we're watching, none of it. It is 100% to do with your state of heart throughout the day and allowing the value of life to be greater than the value of death. It's very simple. If you start to think death is more powerful than life, it's going to be for generations on our planet, and there's no way around it. It's a lesson we need to learn collectively, and we're not learning it. So whoever hears this podcast, if it sticks to you, if it means something, please share it with your followers and your people, because it needs to be heard. It's silly that this has to be a conversation where I have to tell you about all the times I almost died or watched other people almost die. But if it saves one person from death and teaches them to value life more, and as a result, the entire planet and collective consciousness improves, then it was worth me recording this. So thank you for listening. I will have another episode coming up soon, much more positive and interesting and mystical. And also mysterious. Maybe you guys can provide some answers for me, because the next episode I'm going to share is something that I think about every day, and I don't know how to process these emotions and thoughts. So please stay tuned for my next episode, and you'll understand exactly what I'm talking about. Thank you guys for tuning in. The Art of Flying. We do have a GoFundMe going right now. It's to build a free-for-all community food forest in which all of the food I grow on my property, I'm actually going to give away to anybody that needs it for life. We'll have an application that they'll fill out, so I know some information about who they are and where they live and how much family they need to support. And then we'll start doing deliveries, and I'm going to start setting up food banks at local churches, schools, and they actually have community centers down here that are very used. So I'm going to coordinate with them and all my excess food that we're not kind of giving out to grocery shoppers. We'll be going to food banks, and they will be able to distribute it to people in their networks as well. So, guys, I'm only looking for $100,000, and there's a lot of work included. In the United States, the work would cost five times that. I'm here in Costa Rica. They need it more. They have the food all around, but nobody has access to it because the big commercial farms kind of fence off all their properties, and I just want to grow everything on my property. All of my land is a gift. For everybody. They've been so nice to me since I've been here. When I've needed food, they've prepared meals for me. So I want to give back as much as possible. I have my business projects going here that I've financed and I've worked on, but the help I'm looking for is to help other people. It has nothing to do with me. I will not benefit from any of these things in any way, financially or personally. I have my side of my property that I live on and I've built up and I've spent money on. Now, this is putting a roof and solar panels on a giant soccer court, tennis court, for the community to have free internet. I will allow them access to my Wi-Fi all the time, like a restaurant would. So in an area that people don't have internet or access to computers, I'm going to give them access to that. I'm going to teach free English classes. With money collected, we're going to offer free yoga classes and wellness clinics here. I have an acupuncturist and massage therapist who will be offering free services and consultations to people to help them heal their orthopedic injuries from their lifestyles here, which are very active. And we will be offering a lot more. I will be connecting with a lot of local businesses and seeing if they could donate some of their stuff to our project as well. So I'm not just seeking donations online, but I'm seeking them from every person around to catalyze a movement going on here that will last long, long, long after all of us are gone for generations, that this property that I've purchased, which is in the name of my corporation, so when I die, it stays as long as somebody else heeds the corporation. And I already have somebody in mind. My neighbor has a 9-year-old kid, and we're just, I know how to hand this down for generations. If I have kids one day, you know, they'll inherit it and keep it going, and it'll be written in the mission plan that it stays this way for the community forever. So please help. That was my little 5-minute beg for help. I need the help. I don't have any more money coming in. I've spent it all on this community and paying local workers and paying for their, you know, health needs and hospital visits. And I'm at my rock bottom right now, and I'm asking for help, and I've never really done this in my life. So anybody that's listening, anybody that has any friends that might be able to contribute who have had a couple good years financially, please let them know. $5 or $5,000 would be a great help, and it's not just helping me, but dozens, if not hundreds, of other people in this area sustain and live well for generations. And they're teaching their kids that, you know, once we're doing this thing, this is a normal thing that people do. They look out for each other. They grow food for each other. They don't charge each other money. They don't extort each other. This is a normal thing that humans should do, and we've lost track of that, unfortunately. And it's taken me 37 years to find a place where I could live like a normal human. And it's sad because a lot of you are trapped, and there's no escape from it. But what we can do is help people outside of your sphere of influence who need the help and will value the life the way this podcast was made to help people see the value of life again. So thank you guys. I love you. If this is my last day, thank you for listening. I hope to record that next podcast for you. But in the meantime, I'm going to do everything possible to show life I value it, and to teach other people to live that way as well. So thank you.